Hi, everyone. My name's Zach Kobel. I'm the Commission on Disability Issues chairperson, and this is our January 21st, 2026 meeting. It is now 3:31 p.m., and I call this to order, first meeting of the new year. Great to see everyone. Brandy, can you take roll call, please?
Yes, of course. Kate Elliott? Sarah Kroger? Oh, Kate Elliott, perfect. Right. And then Sue Kroger?
Here.
Derek Espadas?
Here.
Megan Bradjevich?
Present.
Oh, you got it. I saw you, too.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Megan.
Here.
Zach Kobel?
Here.
And Ray Jordan.
Yeah.
Okay, and everybody's here.
Okay, great. Thank you, Brandy, and thank you, everyone, for joining us. The first item on our agenda is a call to the public. This is a chance for members of the public to voice any concerns, any issues, or anything exciting within the disability community and the city of Tucson. Take yourself off mute, raise a virtual hand, make yourself known if you have anything to address to the commission. We would greatly appreciate it. And I'm just going to pause for a second. I don't see or hear anyone taking themselves off mute. So I'm assuming that no members of the public have anything to add at this point. So we will move right along on to agenda item number 3, consideration and possible approval for the December 2025 meeting minutes. Which I believe were included in the packet. Did everyone have a chance to look over the meeting minutes? If so, were there any issues, changes, additions, clarifications that needed to be made? Ray?
I would just like to say that the minutes we are currently receiving are really great. They have not too little detail and not too much. So they're easy to read, and they, in my view, are recording the proceeds of the meetings very, very well. So thank you.
Thank you for that feedback, Ray. Sue?
I just want to second that and thank Ray for initiating it, because I couldn't agree more. I think the minutes are wonderful, clear, concise, good grammar. I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Can we motion to give the person who prepares the minutes a raise?
Thank you, Brandy and Stephanie, whichever one of you, prepared the minutes. We appreciate both of you. Given all that feedback, I would be looking for a motion for approval of the minutes.
I will move to approve the minutes.
Nice.
Thank you, Ray. Okay. So we have Ray making the motion and Sue seconding. Brandy, will you take roll call?
Of course. Kate Elliott?
Yes.
Sue Kroger?
Yes.
Derek Espadas?
Yes.
Megan Bradjevich?
Yes.
Jonathan Lee Comfort?
Yes.
Zach Kobel?
Yes.
And Ray Jordan?
Yes.
And it passes 7-0.
Great. Thank you, Brandy. And thanks everyone for the feedback. You know, we really appreciate our city clerk liaisons and all their hard work, as, you know, we're only a small part of their work during the month. The next item on the agenda is an update on the city's efforts on website and web platform accessibility. I believe Karen Agarecki is on the call, and I'm not sure if there are others joining you, Karen, but, you know, we welcome you on the call or on the meeting and appreciate your time. We just kind of wanted to get an update since, you know, April 2026 is right around the corner. You know, I know the federal government is busy with many things these days, but, you know, we still appreciate the effort at accessibility. So.
Yes, thank you. It's just me today. I my colleagues are busy working still. So, but we did kind of go through some of the materials beforehand just to make sure that I wasn't missing anything important in my recap. So I did, let me try to share my screen here. Because I did prepare some information just to help as we talked through some of the updates. So, woo. One moment, please. That is not sharing quite like I was anticipating. I'll do it this way. All right. I think that works. Okay, hopefully that'll work correctly. Now, if only, there we go, I can advance my slides. Okay, there we go. So first thing, I know you guys, you're all familiar with the guidelines, but I included them here at the beginning just to sort of level set and as a reminder of the guidelines that we're working towards. So as you've already mentioned, full compliance is required by April 24th of 2026, so we are rapidly approaching that deadline. Currently, the requirements are to meet the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.1, Levels A and AA. There are Level AAA that is actually already published, but that is not part of the current requirement for legal enforcement. It's just up to the A and AA at this point. It does include all of our websites, our mobile applications, as well as any digital documents. And the city is also accountable for compliance for our integrated third-party products. So we've got a lot of threads that we've been working through, and I think we touched on some of this when I spoke with you a few months ago. So to start with the things that we had proposed to be working on, and I wanted to sort of follow up on the things that we have been doing, which are in alignment with our earlier conversation. So the first part of our project scope was really all about discovery. First thing we needed to do was really identify and confirm what the city's digital sites were. As of right now, we are currently monitoring over 50 sites, which equates to over 9,000 pages of content. So quite a significant volume. That doesn't mean that this list is static as sites change, as new things are brought into production, as pieces are decommissioned, those numbers will fluctuate. But that's kind of about the baseline volume that we're going to expect to be seeing going forward. The other thing that we were working towards was making sure that we maintained a contact list of who all of those individual website editors are. And part of that was in order for us to be able to make sure that we were reaching out to the right folks relative to the same components that they were supporting. And as I mentioned before, this is an ongoing effort. Digital content doesn't remain static as information changes, as projects come into process or complete, those sites will change related to them. So we will see some changes relative to that. Is there a question first? Yes, Ray?
Well, thank you. Just a quick one. How do you define a site?
Great question. There are, and we can talk a little bit more about this as we progress too. There are a number of ways that we're defining a site, and they all have different volumes. So if we look at the city's main website, we are considering that collectively as a single site. So that is one of the largest platforms that we have. We have other areas where people have developed sites relative to ArcGIS, and those are usually set up independent. So that is where they do a lot of the geographical and geospatial type of information related to more of the mapping features, so which are not necessarily something that we can do as part of the city's main site because it doesn't support those same geographical aspects that are needed for mapping. There are other sites that are brought in when a project comes up that might be contracted out with a third party. So those third parties might be using something completely separate. So there's really a large discovery effort in terms of different platforms that are being used, different types of deployments that are being done because of activities that are happening, whether it's an event, a city project, regular daily information. Sorry, I'm getting feedback. Are you able to hear me okay still?
Yes, we're able to hear you.
Okay. So the site can be a single page if it's something relatively small. It could be as many as 3,000 pages, closer to the size of the city website. It's really what is self-considered self-contained. Ideally, the more that we can have those integrated together, the better, because then it allows us to have a better navigational experience moving from one service to another. Once we completed that discovery effort, which again is a dynamic effort, we added each of those individual sites or different types of components to the assessment tool that we have in place, which is called Site Improve. And what Site Improve does is it does what they call a crawl, which is really, it does an examination of all of the pages relative to that particular site to identify what types of issues compared to the requirements it encounters. So from that, we can get a feedback that tells us these are the types of things that are being assessed. These are the quantity of issues that we're seeing of that type, and these are where they're located, so that we can then create some sort of informational report that can help people identify and prioritize what needs to be corrected. The other thing that we've also, and we talked about this previously as well, that we've also encouraged is that if we're finding content out there that is out of date or isn't working properly that can be decommissioned, we would really prefer that those get removed rather than having people spend time trying to remediate something that is no longer good information or valid information. So it cleans up our effort and it improves our accessibility just from the perspective of having those broken items or those irrelevant items removed. We're not creating a situation of misinformation as well. So as I kind of tying into the last slide, the next piece that we talked about were reports. The reports are something that we were able to develop specific to each of those individual full sites, as we just talked about, The other thing that we were able to do were to create reports from a partial site. Now, what do I mean by a partial site? And that really focuses more on something like the city's website. So if you think about the city structure and how we have it divided by different departments, each individual department tends to be the one responsible for the pages relative to their area of service. So, for example, environmental services would be responsible for doing the ones that they have for services related to, like, garbage collection or something in their area of cleanup. Or if you look at transportation, excuse me, they would have some that might be more relative to a project related to a road improvement. Similarly, parks would have individual sites for each of their individual parks. So what we were able to do was identify those subsections so that we could send just the relevant components for these larger areas to those individuals that help support those particular areas, rather than giving them information that they had to help weed through that was not necessarily as relevant to them. We are able to do that on an automated basis. So matching up our content editors with the areas that they support, we do send them monthly reports to show that they can gauge the progress that they've made, see what corrections are still remaining, so then they can again reprioritize the remaining volume of work that they still need to address. As part of that effort, then we also are able to have some snapshots through time to help us monitor and report on progress. So if we see an area that we don't see much progress, if we see a particular type of error that we don't see getting much remediation effort in place, we can start looking at, is that a different type of technical problem that needs to be addressed? Is there a particular group of users that needs more assistance with trying to be able to make those corrections? You know, what else can we offer to help us work towards getting some of these corrective actions in place? The next part of our project scope was really focused on training. First part of that was building out our internal resources. One of the things that we've put in place is a new site on our internal intranet, which includes a page for ADA accessibility. It has tips on how we can create accessible content. It has a wiki that starts to address sort of the how-tos. How do I go in and correct an issue type? It may not be exactly matched to whatever is appearing on their page, but if they understand what is a general correction for that type of error, it gives them some guidance in how they fix the one on their page that's very similar. And it also includes just some helpful links to the Department of Justice information that talks about ADA, and it includes the links to the regulations, any other guidance that they might have out there. We also were able to have some staff augmentation in a limited capacity where we do have a part-time inclusive content strategist contractor on staff. Her contract will be ending here in a few months, but we've been very fortunate to have her on board as a website expert to really help drive some of that information about how do I correct errors, sort of lending to the web content editors so that they know how do they best read the reports, how do they go about correcting the reports, are there considerations when they're prioritizing the things that need to be corrected within their sites. The other prong of our training has really been about educational outreach. And what we're trying to achieve with our outreach is really teaching people how to create accessible content initially so that we're not continually trying to go through this effort of remediation. The remediation effort is still going to continue for a while, but going forward, if the new content is done in an accessible manner, the goal is to minimize how much we have to go back and fix later. So that's really what we are trying to do, not just for our content editors, but from a broader staffing issue of how do we go about approaching teaching them what it means and how to check their documents so that as we continue to build and build more sophisticated documents, we're doing them in a correct manner. So two internal classes were developed so far. The first one was called Accessibility Document Basics Using Microsoft Word. There's a second one that came out that was also built internally, and that one was called Creating Accessible PowerPoint Presentations. We started with those two tools. We started with Word, actually, because that is probably the most commonly used one by most staff. It's also the one that's also used to convert more of your document types into another format, like a PDF. And if we can do the accessibility corrections at the source document, it makes the remediations a lot less and a lot simpler than if it gets into alternative formats down the road. So we've offered these internally to city staff already. We have another round of these courses that are being offered to city staff within the next couple of weeks. We do post the documentation online on our internal intranet site so that we can continue to help educate and teach people how to move forward with creating the documents correctly in the first place. The big step has been remediation. So multiple prongs with this again, too. First step, as I mentioned earlier, we're also responsible for our third parties that are integrated into our city services. So there is an industry accepted template called the Voluntary Product Accessibility Template, often referred to as the VPAT. Working with our procurement department, we have reached out to many of our third-party vendors, those that we know have an external component to them, and asked them to please complete the VPAT form and send it back to us. We've had a mixed response. We have received quite a few back. We do need to continue with our campaign with them, but it is a way for us to at least get better information about those components that we don't necessarily have direct control over in terms of the accessibility corrections that are needed. In support of that, we've also been working with our attorney's office and the procurement department to draft new language that has been added to our procurement contracts templates. So now when we go forward with request for proposals, if we're bringing something else in, it will be included as standard language, much like we did with the HEAT initiative. There will be something very similar to that for digital content, requiring those vendors to adhere to whatever the current standards are at that point. So that is new. That is being included as part of their standard contract template. To kick off a lot of the corrective work that needed to be done, we held a boot camp. And that was, again, an internal effort where we brought in all of our known website content editors, we brought in our ADA liaisons, and we had others that were participating in just because they were either part of the PIO groups, they were part of a training group, but had some level of involvement and engagement where it was important for them to be aware of the work that needed to be done. So as part of that boot camp, we talked about the types of issues that we are seeing, the requirements that we need to be adhering to for accessibility, and how to go about reading through and making some of those corrective actions to those sites that they're supporting. Following our boot camp, we then had a series of office hours, is what we called them, where we came up with a staggered schedule, basically, for an hour at a time, a couple times a week through the end of the year, where people could join an online meeting, come and go at their leisure, to ask questions that were specific to the things that they were trying to correct that might have been, you know, problematic for them, or they just needed to get some guidance on how can I approach this problem and make that correction. A number of people came with specific questions about the sites that they were trying to address. We had others that came just because they wanted to listen and learn. So it was great to have even those that didn't come with questions to just learn and listen to what other people were working through so that it could help them later on. Then the next piece, again, were just the ongoing site-specific remediation efforts. We've had lots and lots of work as far as all of the individual sites, and we continue to offer them a generic email address that they can reach out if we need to get another resource to help address questions, even though we're not doing published office hours currently. So our issues overview, we've had, again, our ongoing outreach. A lot of the ideas or the things that we talked about when we were doing our educational campaign had to do with relating to the types of issues that we were seeing when the assessment tool was doing its scans. Many of them were related to structures and headings. So we were using those as sort of foundational pieces when we developed our, particularly like our Microsoft Word training. So ongoing education about making sure that people are using structures and styles correctly so that it then creates a structured document, which is then more portable to other platforms as well. We taught people about making sure that they're using the features that are embedded into many of the Microsoft tools with the check accessibility button, and also making sure that they're aligning that with the current city branding standards. The branding standards were adopted to try to ensure that we were making, that we were adhering to things like contrast. That's probably the most common one that we've seen. So we really wanted to make sure that even though they were seeing in our example of contrast, if the contrast was there, are they also representing the same schemas that we are looking forward from a standardization perspective to make sure that the branding is in alignment with that as well? And then again, the other piece that we've talked about already is making sure that they are assessing for whether or not something that is coming up as needing remediation should move forward with that effort, or is it something that's a candidate for removal or decommissioning? So just a couple of other facts about some of our issues. Our largest website by far is the City of Tucson's main website. If we look at our collective sites right now that we are monitoring, approximately a third of those monitored sites have now moved into an accessibility score of above 90. So we were far below that just a few months ago. So we're definitely seeing the needle move. And then as we sort of talked about before with our earlier question about what do we call a site, there are multiple platforms that are inclusive of this remediation effort. So we have GIS-based sites. We have the city's main site. We have others that are built on other third-party platforms. So lots of different types of foundational technology is being used. So there's different remediation needed for each of those individual technologies. So lots of work in that area. Some of our more specific metrics. So some of the top issues that we have seen and those with the most number of occurrences, we've also seen a good movement towards improvement in that area. One of our very top issues and improved issues has been the image is missing a text alternative. In parentheses, I have next to that, it's an A, which means that this is a level A type of an issue when we go back to what our requirements are from a compliance perspective. For that type of issue with multiple occurrences of it. We've seen an 84% increase in improvement in the number of errors that we've seen in that area. One of our other very popular issues, color contrast does not meet the minimum requirements. This goes back to the conversation we just had about branding standards too. Again, this is a level AA requirement. We've seen an 83% improvement in that area. A page title is not descriptive. Level A requirement, 74% improvement. A link is missing a text alternative, a level A, 73% improvement. And this one is the last one of our top five has been a much more challenging problem. Text is clipped when resized, which is a level AA requirement, a 31% increase in or improvement. This one in particular, I say, is more challenging because it's less about the page content that our editors are doing, and it has been more of an embedded technology problem that has needed to have some additional support for making some of those corrections. So that was a pretty large jump for us to see that one have some improvement on one of these more complex issues. Of note, beyond just the ones that are required elements and required issues in terms of the regulation, our tool also assesses for best practices issues. And even though these are not necessarily considered the enforceable issues, they are important in terms of the overall experience with a site. And as we've continued to see improvements with not only our enforceable requirements, we're also seeing corrections and improvements with our best practices issues. So those are definitely trending up because the overall work to improve accessibility is, like I said, moving the needle forward. So as people are in making corrections for those level A and AA items on their page, they're also paying attention to some of those best practices issues and making those corrections simultaneously. So we've had a good mix of correction, even though from a legal perspective, the top priorities are addressing the A and AA requirements. We're really trying to do a comprehensive correction and really looking at best practices as part of that effort. So next steps, what are we doing for this year now that we're in 2026? Continuation of our current remediation efforts. We still have volume that needs to be addressed, and that includes both our websites and some of our documents. So some of those older documents that are out there might have bad links in them or something to that effect. So we're still working on those efforts. We're still sending out those reports with those specifics so that we can make those corrections. As I was mentioning before, our VPAT campaign with our third-party vendors, we're going to continue to do follow-up with those that we have not received a response from yet, so that we do have a comprehensive group of all of our externally-facing third-party products with those informational templates returned that outlines what has been done and what's still outstanding. Next piece we really need to start working towards is once we've hit our compliance deadline is really making this more of an operational framework. Our initial effort has really been focused on fixing what's out there, but we really need to make this more operational going forward because, as we were talking about, this is a dynamic process and this is dynamic information. So we need to make sure that we are maintaining our inventory. As projects finished and sites are decommissioned, we want to make sure that we're taking those out and we're not trying to falsely report on something that is no longer in service. Similarly, when something new comes along, we want to make sure that gets added in and who's taking care of that so that we can continue to make sure those are monitored and reported on a regular basis. And then making sure that we have a loop for corrective efforts. So if there is content that gets out there, which will happen, that does have an issues reported for it, that we make sure that those are getting recognized getting to the right individuals for correction and are getting remediated properly. The next big step that we want to make sure that we're working towards is continuing our educational outreach. So as I've already mentioned, we do have some repeat class offerings that we're spinning up again. We are hoping that we can develop additional class types going forward. And then enhancing our training materials, not just for the class offerings that I'm just spoke about, but also going back to our internal ADA accessibility site that has some of that how-to information. So as people are continuing to learn and correct problems, adding that content into that site, so for the next time that it occurs, people have a point of reference to go in and say, okay, how do I make this correction? So that's, again, not just the classes, but also the information for more specific remediation type efforts that we're after. And that's really all I have for today, unless there are other specific questions.
Thank you so much, Karen. I know I have a couple questions and follow-up, but, you know, I will defer to other members of the commission first, if they have questions. Oh, okay. So I'm not seeing anyone, but you know, feel free to unmute yourself and interrupt me. I'm happy to defer. So I was curious, either like with the ongoing efforts or the inclusive like web content consultant, if and I don't know if like social media postings are covered under like the federal guidance or not, or how that's interacting, but you know, if there had been talk of like making sure that, you know, different city departments, when they're making social media postings with content like pictures or that type of thing, have like image descriptions or you know, either external to the post or internal to the picture, depending on the social media site, and like kind of if social media was covered in like training, or if that's a future goal.
Social media is not something that we've covered up to this point. We have had some preliminary conversation about addressing video content, which has also not been something that we've actively been working on currently. We've really been focused more on the regular services sites that we have, more so than addressing anything with social media.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, cover the, you know, you all have a lot to do, with 9,000 web pages and plus, whatever other web apps are covered under that.
Mm-hmm.
Other question I had, I guess, do mayor and council like have their own separate like site editors in their office, or did somewhere in their offices receive training, or who's responsible for them as elected officials, or how's that work?
Yeah, most of them have their own person. How they go about determining who that person would be, I can't speak to. But we do try to make sure that we do have whomever their point of contact is, so that we can also include their sites. Many of them are independent from the main city sites, but we do include them into our assessment tool and make sure that we are also generating monthly reports for those individuals that are supporting those sites in particular.
Okay. And I mean, it sounds like you all have done such, you know, such great progress in addressing this. And I understand, you know, the focus on like Word and PowerPoint as like the two main, you know, areas that a person, you know, or city employees might use mm-hmm. to create content. You know, I know different departments use Excel spreadsheets or other graphical applications for mapping or that type of thing. That is accessible to the public. You know, is there specialized training or how do things work with kind of, like other types of applications that aren't maybe typical, mm-hmm. for, yeah.
Yeah. So good question. So to go to the first piece of your question about things like Excel, those are some of the offerings that we are hoping to build upon. The Microsoft tools themselves all contain that check accessibility button that we were trying to teach people about with just Word to begin with. That is also available in things like Outlook, which is the email system that we use. Mm-hmm. It's available in OneNote, which is just mm-hmm. like a notepad thing. It right. is available in Excel as well. So as we're teaching it, for usage with Word, we're also making sure that we let them know that it is available in the suite of Microsoft products that we're using. And then, I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of your question. So,
just, you know, different departments might use like, you know, public mapping or other right, types right. of graphical interfaces that, yeah. you know, the public has access to. You know, to show maps. I know Park Tucson, like, you're supposed to be able to access, like, kind of the maps of, like, the different parking areas for, like, downtown Tucson, mm-hmm. as an example. And I wasn't sure if, you know, things like that or other things that planning and development or, transportation and mobility department would use, would, you know, are covered under kind of access standards or how that works.
Yes. So the mapping ones are more challenging. So when we talked mm-hmm. earlier about how we're using multiple platforms, and I'd mentioned some of the graphical ones, that relates to exactly what you're asking about. So we do have a team here within IT that is focused more on GIS, which is those mapping mm-hmm. platforms specifically. There are some sites where we are able to make corrective action, and we are generating reporting based on those graphically based sites. Mapping themselves, there are some pieces where they are not compliant. And it is partially due to the technology, the underlying technology isn't compliant at this point either. Mm-hmm. We are working to make as much of it as possible, meet those accessibility guidelines. But we do recognize that there are some pieces where we're having more challenges or the technology just isn't sophisticated enough yet to be able to correct everything. But it is a very targeted effort. We do have mm-hmm. a specialized staff that is helping to work on that. So it is something mm-hmm. that we are addressing.
Okay, great. Megan, I see your hand up. I'll defer to you. I had a lot of questions.
No, they're good questions. Thank you. I was wondering, when you guys – hold on, I wrote it down because I knew I'd forget. Mm-hmm. Okay. When you are meeting the requirements, how do you guys check? And what I mean by that more so is, are you testing it on the devices and the programs that they are meant to be used for?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So we're doing a little bit of a combination. Many of our tests currently, just because we have such a large volume, are really going through the assessment tool and to see if the assessment tool is returning that whatever corrections were made were in fact picked up and corrected. We do have some individuals that are working with some of the free tools to help do some manual testing, but because time is a huge consideration for us right now, we are honestly using the tool as much as possible to do as much volume as we can at this point. We don't necessarily have people internal to the department that have purchased licensing for specific assistive devices, but as much as we can use freer tools, we are. We do have some individuals that have offered to do some level of testing. We haven't reached a point where I think we've been able to reach out and ask for those individuals to help with us, just because time and volume is a huge constraint at this time. But going forward, at some point, I do expect that we'll have more involvement in that area.
That's good to hear. And I completely mm-hmm. understand getting the most done right now is important, and fine tweaking yeah. later. So I'm glad to hear that you guys are planning for that later. So thank yes. you for answering my question.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Karen. Does anyone, I'm going to give a few seconds. Does anyone else have any, quick questions before we move on with our other agenda items? Ray, I see your hand up, so go for it.
Thank you, sir. I hope this is a quick question. within the various city departments, there's obviously multiple people who create content that will end up on a website. Does the person who makes the content generally convert that after using MS Word or something like that to HTML format, and then hand it to a webmaster who uploads it and checks that the links all work? Or can you just describe a little bit about the mechanics of how that actually works in real life?
Yeah, if we take the example of the city's main website, it's intended to be more of a no-code platform. So think of it more like a social media platform where you're contributing content directly, not necessarily having to do something programmatically by generating HTML code. The framework is already in place to be able to generate a page and then add in the information that you want somebody to access. So if somebody is doing something with a document like you've talked about, the Word document would be done using the regular Microsoft products. It might get converted to a PDF. It could get posted as a link on somebody's page. But we're really also wanting to have people do less of that and really add content directly into the page, similar to adding postings as if you're doing something like a social media. Here's my information. Rather than click on this link, go to this separate document. It just tends to be more sustainable. It's more searchable. And I think it gives us better results in the end if we can limit those other types of documents and do it more as a direct page of information. So that's really where we're trying to shape more of our future of what our websites look like.
And you mentioned the word searchable. So mm-hmm. that was a question I've been thinking about all through this. Do the accessibility standards address searchability or perhaps findability within a website?
The standards, not necessarily, but the tool that we are using also does help us assess what our search, I guess, your quality is and your search optimization. So that is something that we also are paying attention to, but it's not necessarily something that's driven by the guidelines specifically.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. as we are kind of running at our time for Karen's presentation and question, you know, I'd like to move on. Thank you so much, Karen, for coming on, giving us the update, and, you know, all your hard work at creating more access
for
the city's web platforms.
Thank you for having me. You're welcome.
Okay, we are going to move on to the next agenda item, which is very, very exciting. So for all those who've been on the commission and those who may have recently joined, we have to write an annual report to Mayor and Council about what, you know, what our priorities are and what actions we have taken over the last year or so. That report is due, I believe, by the end of February. In any case, it's due after our next meeting. So in the next month or so, we need to draft an annual report. And then that'll be an agenda item to look at it and hopefully approve it next month. I have typically done it the last few years, and I have, you know, maybe not so much a template, but a good starting place. Would anyone else like to assist in that or take that on? No expectations, but if you're interested, I wanted to provide this wonderful opportunity.
I don't know a lot about it. Maybe you can send me the template and I'll see if it's something that I am capable of doing, because I would like to give it a try.
Okay, great. Great, Megan. Thank you so much. I'll send you like last year's report, and then kind of like some notes of what we've done over the past year. And then, you know, if there are other things that come up during this meeting, that would be beneficial to include that, and that we can talk about that. Ray, are you also volunteering or commenting?
I would be happy to provide a helping hand also.
Okay, great. So thank you, Megan and Ray. I'll send an email probably this weekend sometime when I have some clear time. We have plenty of time for the report, but just wanted to give everyone a heads up. Okay, we have a little bit more time than I think I anticipated. So we can talk about goals. This next agenda item was more for like a few goals I have, and then I'd like to have like feedback or if you all have ideas, as we are at the start of the year. A couple goals I have are we have two open commission seats, on CODI. It would be really great if we could fill those, especially as they, are, you know, ward office appointees, you know, and there are elected officials. So thank you, Derek, for noting who might be interested in CODI. But if any of you all have people in your disabled people in your life that might be interested in CODI, reach out to them. And, you know, we can see if we can get, you know, those filled, you know, Ward 6. It's not been very long. Ward 1's been open for a while, so it would be great to get those filled. So that would be my goal, is to have a full CODI cohort, full commission by the end of the year. The second goal is by the end of the year, I would like to step back from being chair. I'm happy to be on the commission further. I don't plan to go anywhere unless Councilmember Lee, decides to kick me off. But it would be great if I could kind of step back from leadership just with different things going on in my life. And it doesn't mean I won't contribute. Just, I would be happy if someone else could kind of take some of the responsibility. And so plenty of time to think about that and consider it, but I just, that would be one of my personal goals. And third, I was thinking about our last meeting with Corin Manning and, what is some interesting things that she noted in her presentation were that, the visibility ordinance, which passed, in the late aughts in the city of Tucson, was great. Was great. It's a good thing. But there are definite things that, could be improved upon, including, eliminating or reducing the exception of like $200 to applying the ordinance, to also increasing the requirements of accessibility within new builds of residences, that type of thing. And given that, the city is focused on building new housing, this would be a good time to try to advocate for new accessibility and visibility standards within residences, as we are going to be hopefully building a lot more places, to provide housing to people. So that would be something that I would like, the commission to think about advocating for, and reaching out to the various ward offices, to see if we could push them to actually adopt something. So I'd like to investigate kind of what that would mean, build momentum, figure out a strategy to talk to our ward offices, get other ward offices that don't have appointees to buy in, and see what we can get done. And that may take more than a year, but I think it's a good goal. So those would be my top three, but I'm happy to hear, any other feedback, goals you all have, because it's not just me.
I'd jump in here. I'd like to explore during this year a little more about transit accessibility, sidewalk accessibility, the ordinance that kind of stalls a lot of sidewalk repair, as far as I can tell. That's one of my, goals, two of my goals for this year.
Those are really good goals, Ray. And I see your hand up, Megan, if you have things. I think definitely exploring those things. And even if we can't figure out, something like a proposal or, push mayor, and at least figuring out the barriers and what's possible versus what's not, like what's within mayor and council's power and really what's not. Cause I don't think that's been ever clarified for me, especially with like sidewalk accessibility and taxiing and that type of thing. So yeah. other goals or thoughts from folks?
So,
mm-hmm.
Are you ready to take this up a couple of notches?
Sure, Derek, let's take it up.
So I think there's a need especially with some of the ice activity going on in the city. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in the past, I've been privileged to kind of use my disability for safety. Like, if they're going to go after anyone, they're probably least likely going to go after me, but that is no mm-hmm. longer the case. Yeah. So I think maybe, and I know that there's plans being talked about of what to do in certain situations, but like with most plans, I think the disabled community gets left out, and I think mm-hmm. we are ultra vulnerable. And so maybe discussing, like, what are the plans for the disabled if encountered, and, you know, what are the safety precautions and best practices?
I think that's a great and very needed, a very needed discussion and inclusion. I know Mayor and Council put out, like, a safety framework, Know Your Rights thing, like last week. But given, you know, that in a lot of ways, you know, disabled people have varying needs of, like, that don't always make sense in a general, general environment, in the non-disabled world. I think, you know, looking at kind of what the city's framework and ways they're going to deal with this and how that either includes disabled people or doesn't include disabled people would be very helpful. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it next month. I mean, I'll do research of who to contact, but, you know, depending on their availability. But let me see if I can get someone on a CODI meeting to talk about, you know, those frameworks and how they're including in the next, like, couple meeting sessions. And I'll make that, like, a priority given the, you know, the time frame. Ray?
Continuing on that very interesting topic, we had a presentation during last year from a person who provided disability training to TPD, the Tucson mm-hmm. Police Department.
Yeah.
And I wonder, in connection, whether there's some leverage to be gained by what the TPD people have learned about how to interact with people with disability in that mm-hmm. much broader context.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think that's a good discussion to have with a representative from TPD in this situation, because from my understanding, like, or what I was reading, you know, TPD is not going to participate in civil immigration enforcement actions, but if they, you know, if there is disturbance, that needs to be addressed, through federal and public interaction, you know, TPD may be called out. So, you know, how they are thinking that will, you know, how they will be addressing that if disabled people are involved would be very key to our disability community. So, Megan?
Hello. Hello. I guess I think this is more of like a wish list shot in the dark. Like, I don't really, I'm still getting the mm-hmm. hang of things here. But something that I've been having my eye on is like how IDEA is implemented in TUSD. Mm-hmm. Just because I know nationwide the oversight, the funding on it is pretty bare. So I don't know who really is connected with that in our schools, especially since I didn't go to schools here. I don't know too much about that. But, mm-hmm. like, I would like to see, like, the efficacy of that implementation improve. So if that's something we can discuss this year.
Yeah, I think we could, you know, ask for, like, we've had, so the city doesn't really have much power or control over, you know, school districts and school implementation of IEPs. But we have had, you know, the Pima County Recorder has come on, and different Pima County officials have come on to Cody to kind of educate and, you know, answer questions. So, I mean, we could try to reach out to a representative of TUSD to ask questions. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely possible. And then, you know, I don't, like, I'd have to do a lot more research to find out if there is, you know, organized advocacy that would be interesting to be involved with as well. So, you know, that would go to TUSD board meetings, like, and, like, you know, talk to board members or staff of TUSD that have more administrative control over the IEP nice. Process.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks. Does anyone else have ideas or comments that they would like to put forward? Okay. Well, reach out to me. If you do, I'm happy to hear. Also, reach out to me if you're, you know, at all interested in any of the other goals that I talked about. You know, chairing, and, you know, no disabled community members who might be a good fit for CODI membership. So. Yeah, you know, I think everyone knows where to find me. Ray?
Just a thought to connect some dots here. I'm wondering whether our report for 2025 should end with a, here's what we're planning, considering to tackle for 2026. This is a preemptive thing for mayor and council to say, oh, these people have kind of got plans.
Yeah, I think we've done that in the past where, you know, like the draft has said, and in 2026, we are going to cover these issues. So we can do that again, but more, maybe in a more stronger, a little bit stronger way, but without going into a full, you know, other report. That's a great idea. Okay. So that brings us to our last substantive agenda item for the day, and that's announcements. And we had that for 9 months, but we do have we're running ahead of schedule, so if people have announcements, please feel free. Ray?
Hi, me again. This coming Tuesday morning, I got myself an invitation to the SunTran office on the north side of town to observe the wheelchair securement component of new bus driver training. They apparently do this every 2 weeks. So I'm going to go check it out and see how they do it and report back.
Awesome. Looking forward to that report. Your report back, for sure. Other announcements that people might have. Okay. Jennifer? Yeah.
Hello. Good afternoon, commissioners. I wanted to share that in early December, TPD received training from folks with UAPD and I believe a researcher at the U of A on the Blue Envelope program. I don't know how folks are familiar with that program, if at all. It's a voluntary.
No.
Okay. It's a voluntary program with ADOT, and the program was designed to ensure traffic stop interactions between law enforcement and artistic drivers are handled safely and effectively by having this blue envelope that autistic drivers can place in their glove compartment. And it's where they place like their registration and other important information. And so if an autistic driver is pulled over, then they can just reach in their glove compartment and it gives tips to the driver on how to interact with police. But also for police officers, importantly, it gives tips on how they might, modify their interaction or things they would take into consideration when dealing with the driver, you know, like speaking slower, giving the individual more time to respond, things of that nature. And the training was attended by motor officers. So, you know, the okay. folks that would be responsible for pulling people over.
That makes sense. Yeah, thank you for letting us know, Jennifer. I may reach out to you in the coming days with to see if possibly you have a TPD contact that I could reach out to about a meeting with Cody on some of the topics that we've discussed and that topic as well. So thank
sure,
you.
I'll keep an eye out.
Thanks. I guess my one announcement is that I will remind people that we do have a countywide election coming up pretty soon. I'd have to look at the exact dates, but I know mail ballots go out for the RTA next election on, I believe, February 11th. We've talked about that in the past, but that is the sales tax that fund has funded and would continue to fund to one degree or another transit, public pedestrian safety, ADA improvements, and road improvements, and just reminding people, I would expect that the Complete Streets Coordinating Council, which I represent Cody on, will probably have a public letter, about that next week at its at our next meeting, and I can share that at the next meeting as well. But if you're interested, that letter will probably be published before our next CODI meeting, and that might go over some pros and cons of RTA next. That was my announcement. Anyone else have announcements? Ray.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No worries.
Transit related again. As some people may know, I am a member of the Tucson Transit Advisory Committee, and a couple of the topics, one of them has been RTA Next, that you were just talking about, Zach. And, mm-hmm. Public transit is part of that, as well as, of course, pedestrian safety, roads, road upgrades, all kinds of things. So I think it's a really important thing to at least know something about before you decide whether or not to support it. One of the other things is transit safety. There's a Mayor and Council came up, directed the Department of Transport and Mobility to come up with a plan for transit safety. They've done so. They've provided from council funds $500,000 in the near term to fund 3 off-duty police officers and a whole bunch of site improvements, particularly to bus stops, to discourage people hanging out and participating in nefarious activities, which is all great. And if RTA next is voted with a big yes, or even a little yes for that matter, there will be additional funds for public transit safety as well included in all of that. Kind of related to that, there are 1 or 2 council members who are of the view that transit safety is somehow related to the fact that Tucson's public transit is currently fare-free. There's a bunch of more discussion coming up on that. So if anybody's got opinions, perhaps, because I'll be involved in those discussions, if through the chair you could get me those opinions so that I'll be fairly representing not only my own thoughts on the subject, but other people's as well. I think that's really important, so I can have a much wider view than my own particular thoughts.
Thanks, Ray. Again, I'm happy to facilitate that as well. Megan?
In regards to what Ray was just discussing, we have had conversations about that in the Ward 2 office, about the free fare system. Paul, Chris, myself included, all share a similar perspective on the free fare system. Paul has tried to create his own. It was just an idea of his to try and make a more affordable paratransit system while also maintaining an affordable public transit system. But it wouldn't mean that public transit stays completely free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe you both have each other's emails, but if not, I'm happy to facilitate that if you want to continue the discussion. Any other announcements? Okay, folks. We wrapped up. So I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 4:49 p.m. Thanks for participating and look forward to seeing you or hearing from you soon. Okay.
Have a great day, everyone.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.